Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 71 of the Panelcast. This is Brian.
And this is AJ, and this week's episode of the Panelcast, I know we missed out last week because we suck, but this week, we're going to catch up on the news we missed from last week, as well as everything that came out this week. Brian is going to talk to us a little bit about his Dexter experience, as well as some of the stuff he's reading, and I am going to talk about absolutely nothing. So, all that and more on this episode. Be right back.
Hey, this is Brian of the Forbidden Panel Podcast. I just want to invite you to listen to my companion podcast, The Geek Girls, featuring one-on-one interviews with geeky ladies. Look for Geek Girls on ForbiddenPanel.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Panelcast. Now, in this first segment, like we normally do, we're going to go into our news stories. So, Brian, why don't you go ahead and take it away?
The first one that I have here is kind of interesting. Apparently, the comics publisher, Slave Labor Graphics, I'm sure everybody's probably familiar with them for their Lenore and Johnny the Homicidal Maniac series. But apparently, they've decided that being in comics is not making them enough money, and they're trying to step out into the music industry. So I guess they're starting up a side venture that's called Slabyard Sound. So I guess it'll be kind of interesting to see. I don't know if they're planning on doing something that kind of like catering to the same crowd that they cater to with Slave Labor, or if they're going to be trying to do more mainstream music. I imagine they probably are going to be getting into sort of like the more obscure genres of music. Probably something that, you know, people that like reading, like Squee comics are going to be listening to.
Yeah, so you mean like more of the emo / goth type style?
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming. I haven't been able to find any information regarding any of the actual artists that they've got signed up, if any at all. So it's possible that, you know, maybe they've, I don't know, maybe they don't even have any artists yet. I haven't really been able to find a whole lot of details on it just yet. But they have officially announced that they are starting up a side venture. So I imagine they've got to have some musical acts already lined up if they're going to be starting. It'd be kind of stupid to start a music company with no talent.
I don't know. They could just be like, you know, let's do music. Okay. And then just walk away. But you never know.
Well, the stories that I've read on it suggest that they've already got the business pretty much set up. They're just getting started with actually publishing music.
Well, alrighty then. I don't know. I was kind of enjoying that long pause that we just had. Hang on.
We'll see.
Okay, and we're done. In movie casting news, I should give everybody a heads up right now. I pretty much have nothing but movie news going on right now, so be ready for it. Where is my story? I can't remember anything. Lock and Key, the TV adaptation of Joe Hill's comic book series, has cast the mother of the role, and that being Miranda Otto. She has, you may be familiar with her from the Lord of the Rings series. She played Eowyn. Very, very, very hot chick. Anyway, she's been cast as the mother, while Mark Romanek is in talks to direct the pilot of the comic book adaptation. No news on anything else right now, right, but it looks like they are moving forward, and I'm very happy to see that she is being cast as the mom. I think she would do a good job in it. So, yeah. Kind of happy about that. Brian?
This is a story that I'm not really talking about the comic so much as I am talking about the technology behind it is why this story interested me. It was reported, I think, originally through Associated Press, but a couple of other places have picked it up as well. That apparently there's a site that's called PixFusion that is going to start giving people the ability to essentially upload their faces into a series of Garfield comic strips that have been sort of marginally animated. And I don't know, this story I thought was weird on a number of levels, in that, for one, apparently it's going to cost 99 cents to personalize the comic strip and then get a link to post it around the internet so that people can take a look at it. Or you can spend $4 to be able to download, I guess, a little video file to your computer so you can do whatever. And a $10 model, which apparently allows you to create as many strips as you want. And I don't know. Like, Jim Davis has put his support behind this particular project, and he's I guess pretty well known for, you know, being pretty open about his intellectual property and not really, you know, allowing people to kind of explore different formats with it. But this story kind of makes it seem like this is something huge and revolutionary and a new way for people to interact with comics. And this technology has been around for so long.
It does seem kind of silly. I mean, it's something we've been able to do for a long time, thanks to Photoshop. So,
you know, this is going to be a huge thing. Like, it almost doesn't even merit a story, in my opinion. Even before Photoshop was, you know, readily available to people, there were still other technologies where you could kind of put your face into another thing. I mean, essentially, this really is kind of the same type of thing as, you know, back during the advent of camera photography, when they would just have big wooden cutouts with, you know, you stuck your face in. I mean, this is just a digital form of that. It's not anything new.
Well, maybe it's more aimed at kids.
Even anything
I
think that would really be.
You're right. It does seem like a silly story, but
payment, and then
it's got
to
be appealing to somebody. Otherwise,
to download something that you could Photoshop yourself in about 12 seconds is okay. Right. Well, the tone of the article that I read are trying to tout
according
it,
to the last ZKS
the
contest, a lot of people do want to
interaction
see their
with their
characters.
Comics, and I don't think that's really what people want when they read comics, is to see their face on the characters. Like this is.
Yeah, I agree on that. It does seem very gimmicky and nonsensical, but you know,
well,
if it makes the money,
okay,
so
granted,
so be
maybe
it.
They
do
have
it?
Something here. The whole PixFusion thing. I don't know. This just seems pretty gimmicky to me. And it doesn't really seem... Yeah. I'm sure somebody out there is going to pay to have it done. So, I don't think it's
right.
The next... You know,
and news that came out last week
stuff.
That we failed
I think
to
it's just
on.
It's just something that's going to be more of a fad.
Dennis Leary has
been
cast as Gwen,
improvement to the genre.
Gwen Stacy's father in the upcoming Spider-Man.
That's all I've
film.
Got. What about you?
He entered into negotiations to join the movie. So he will play police captain George Stacy, the father of Spidey's love interest, Gwen Stacy, and a man who frequently comes into contact with the web-slinging superhero. George Stacy is a big staple as far as the Spider-Man universe goes, in that he died in an accident in a battle between Spider-Man and Dr. Octopus, and because of that, it led to Gwen Stacy hitting Spider-Man. Now, eventually, Gwen Stacy falls in love with Spider-Man, blah, 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 and she's killed by, technically Spider-Man, but she's killed when the Green Goblin throws her off the bridge. A scene that was emulated in the recent reincarnation of Spider-Man in the first film, except it was with Mary Jane instead of Gwen Stacy. So, I don't know. It's Dennis Leary, and as far as I'm concerned, Dennis Leary's the man. So seeing him show up in the comic book movie in such a capacity might be kind of cool to see. So, yeah. Brian? It's because you suck.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm that big of a fan of Dennis Leary.
No, it's sad. Like, you know, all these stories and stuff that we always report on movies and everything that comes out. While we may sound disappointed when we were reporting them,
I'll still probably go see
it. At the end of the day, we're still going to go see the fucking movie.
This doesn't really affect my decision.
It doesn't matter what movie it is. We're still going to go see the damn thing. So, you know, we may not be happy about it or what have you. You know what? You can't even say that because we'll still go see it. We will still go see it.
Yeah, okay? We're still going to go see it.
We saw fucking Transformers. We'll go see anything else. So,
unless I hear that Michael Bay's
so we can't act like we're all hobnobby
to the Spider-Man movie, and then...
Oh, no, screw that, Dennis Leary. I'm not seeing Spider-Man at all. No, we'll fucking go see it, Dennis. Don't worry about it. We'll bitch about it afterwards if you suck, but...
Yeah, sadly, but that's
we'll, you'll still
true.
Get our $12 to go see it. Brian, what else you got? Blue Water?
Oh, this one's probably going to be kind of cathartic for me, so I haven't bitched about it in a while. Yeah, Blue Water Comics decided that the next person they're going to tackle for their Female Force comic line is Angelina Jolie. And apparently they think that the quote that I read in one of the articles here is that from the, I don't know if this is even from the artist or the writer, or even fuck if I know, writer from the writer, Brent right. Sprecher, said, "My hope is that this biography in some small way inspires others to follow Angelina Jolie's example and making those in need a part of their daily lives." Right, that's exactly why people are going to buy this comic. Mm-hmm. It's,
you know, lately when I think about Blue Water,
stories,
all I can think of is poor John Saul sitting in an empty, lonely office by himself, right?
People that, you know,
thinking, but
you're
I thought
writing
by signing
about,
up,
so.
I get to hang out with all these cool people.
It's quite an inspiration.
Poor
there.
John Saul. You're sitting there by yourself. Angelina Jolie's not going to show up and say hi. You're not going to meet the cast of Twilight. None of those people ever cruise by the office, the Blue Water office. The most you'll see is William fucking Shatner wandering around just talking shit. So, sorry.
Yeah.
So, moving on. further moving news, there's been a lot of rumors floating around recently about the Dark Knight Rises, the new Batman movie coming out. let's see, where do I start? There's like a bunch of them. Looks like they're going to have the script by January. They're going to shoot in May and finish in November. That's what Michael Caine is reporting. Also, that the film would be based off of the story arc called Prey. Doug Monch's 5-issue serial, which is described as an unofficial follow-up to Batman Year One, which itself was heavily inspired by Nolan's first Batman film, Batman Begins. In Prey, Police Commissioner Gordon tries to maintain his relationship with Batman whilst heading up a special task force dedicated to capturing him, a task force set up by the mayor at the request of deranged police psychiatrist named Dr. Hugo Strange. Strange deduces Batman's identity and plays psychologically with him, eventually planning to kill him and take on the Batman identity for himself. Catwoman also figures into the story. Now, I haven't had a chance to read Prey, but I've read Year One, The Long Halloween, as well as Dark Victory, all of which seemed heavy influences into the first two films that we've seen. So, It doesn't sound like there's going to be any big time villains going on in the new Batman, but also,
right,
it seems like the best that they can do when they want to keep it reality based with Dr. Hugo Strange, you know. So that I'm kind of okay with that. Now, another rumor that's floating around is
the
one of the key
that
villains
so far
of George Miller's defunct Justice League
just
film
was
Talia
as
al
long
Ghul,
as the
which was the daughter of Ra's
is
al
pretty
Ghul,
solid,
and love interest of Bruce Wayne.
It'll be a good film.
Currently, in the stories in the Batman comics, Talia had Bruce's child, Damian, who is the current Robin Hood. Robin Hood? What the fuck am I talking about? Who's the current Robin? They had cast actress Teresa Palmer to play the role. Since then, MovieWeb has gotten in touch with Palmer and asked if she's been in contact with Nolan's people about potentially playing the part in The Dark Knight Rises. She's responded that she's put the feelers out there and her agents are trying to bring something up. Basically, what she's trying to say is she really, really, really wants to be in the movie and is trying to petition to get into it. So we shall see if that happens. I'd be interested in seeing Talia al Ghul. She's always been a great, I don't know how to put it, a great add-on to Batman's villains, as well as, you know, having that Catwoman type deal going on where, you know, he wants to love her but can't. So it'd be kind of cool to see. And the last bit of news on the Dark Knight Rises is that Christian Bale, in all his wonderment and intelligence, was recently asked his opinion on the title being The Dark Knight Rises. Bale admitted he didn't know what the title was, and when told, said, "I don't even know if that's true. Until Chris tells me, I don't know." This dumbass, I love you, Christian Bale. I think you're a phenomenal actor, right? And I cannot praise you enough on how much I dig you as an actor. As a person, you're a fucking idiot. You don't even know what the name of the movie you're going to be in is. Especially the Batman, for Christ's sake. You're fired. You're just fired. So yeah. Brian? Awesome.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Panelcast. All right, we've got a couple more stories we're going to do here. So, AJ, why don't you go start us off?
Well, the first big news that's going on out there right now is apparently somebody had it in their mind to reboot the Buffy series.
Yeah, I heard about this.
So, yay on Buffy series being rebooted on the big screen only. Boo on the fact that it's done without Joss Whedon. He is not writing, directing, or having anything to do with it. He's not even receiving any money from it, which is sad because he doesn't own the property rights. But he is quoted as saying, "This is a sad, sad reflection on our times when people must feed off the carcasses of beloved stories from their youth just because they can't think of original ideas of their own." He goes on to state that, you know, he's very sad about the fact that he can't have anything to do with the series or the reboot or anything like that. But, you know, at the same time, he's making an Avengers movie, so he goes on to make fun of himself and others that are doing the same thing. Personally, I'm a huge fan of the Buffy series. You know, it took me a while to get into it, but after watching it, I can't speak. But after watching a few episodes in a row, I grew to love it, as well as Angel and anything else Joss Whedon has done ever since then. I'm a huge Firefly fan, and a big Dollhouse fan, even though it kind of sucked in the last season. So, you know, I feel... go ahead.
I never really got into Buffy at all. You know, I watched a few episodes of it. I just couldn't get into it. And so, but it does... I do kind of feel for Joss Whedon, though, you know, when you have something that you have created that, you know, essentially you no longer have any control over because somebody else owns it now, and you just have to kind of watch whatever they do to it.
This is a big steaming pile of bullshit. It'd be like somebody else writing ZKS and I couldn't have anything to do with it. You know, and, right. and so I feel for him on that behalf. But at the same time, being a fan of Buffy in itself, seeing the film franchise being rebooted, the TV show being rebooted as a film franchise might be good. You know, again, it's like we had stated before. We'll talk shit about it on the show, but eventually we're going to give you our $12, and we'll see it anyway. So, yeah. Having said that, we will keep an eye out for anything that's happening on that with that story. And in the meantime, Brian, it's your turn.
Well, we've got a story here that kind of goes along the lines with what we were discussing with the whole Buffy reboot. And this is going to be a sort of, I guess, a contemporary reboot of J.M. Barrie's Peter Pan story. This is going to be done by Swiss filmmaker Ben Hibben, and I guess he's trying to do sort of like a more realistic retelling of the story. And from what I can tell about this is that it's sort of going to be like a reimagining of the story rather than just a modern update. Like it's not going to be the exact same story with just, you know, a modern setting. Like it from what the very vague description that they give is a burned out ex-police detective trying to track down a kidnapper whom witnesses describe as being childlike. So this could go either way. For anybody that has seen the new Harry Potter movies, which I have not, Hibben was responsible for directing the animated shadow sequence,
which was gorgeous, let me tell you.
Yeah, for the during like the title sequence, like when, you know, when the title of the movie is coming up, he was responsible for setting that
No, he wasn't. There's an actual animated segment in the middle of the film, and that's what he was directing.
Okay, well this story is really vague and kind of not well written, so I wasn't able to gather all that. Yeah, but I'm not 100% sure how I feel about Peter Pan remake. I mean, on the one hand, you know, it's something that's in the public domain, so anybody can take it and do whatever they want with it. And, you know, they can each, like, it's available free for anybody to kind of do their own adaptations. And it could work out, because it has worked out well in the past. So I think probably it's going to be another case of me just trying to reserve my judgments of it until I can actually see some actual information rather than just a sort of a vague description about it.
Well, you know, when I originally sent you the story, it was more of a heads up, you know what I mean? Give the people you know, a heads up as to what's coming in. I personally am kind of excited about it because I just to see that in that kind of storyline, but, you know, in a realistic present tense, has me excited because, you know, I'm always a big fan of that if it's done well. For example, the TV series Kings, which I reviewed, you know, a couple months ago or something, I loved it. It was a retelling of David and Goliath, but set in a modern tone, and I loved it. I thought it was amazing, and hopefully this will be in the same vein. I mean, come on, Captain Hook as a ex police detective, Peter Pan as the leader of a child smuggling ring. I mean, it's going to be kind of cool. Hopefully it'll be violent, but, you know, and sometimes, you know, people watch these things and they don't even realize it's a reimagining. You know, like,
well, I think that's usually the case where I kind of like it better when they do it so that it kind of becomes its own story. Like if you know it's a reimagining, you can definitely see the parallels between the modern story and the original
story. Because you're looking for it.
But right. And, you know, even something, you know, in the case where it's like it's there because they included that in it because, you know, they kept a lot of elements from the original story, but they changed it enough to give it a context of its own. Like the story makes self, you know, makes sense to itself. Like if that makes any sense at all.
No, it totally does. But I mean, look at the Magnificent Seven. Okay.
Right.
An obvious.
Yeah, I think we discussed this last podcast.
Right. Obvious retelling of the Seven Samurai. Look at The Last Man Standing or Lucky Number 11. Those were remakes of Yojimbo. You know, but right. If you didn't know, and nobody knew about it, so they couldn't tell. They thought it was awesome. Bruce Willis in the movie. Woo! Actually, both movies had Bruce Willis in it. That's kind of creepy. I mean, if you don't know about it, then it comes as a complete surprise. But if you do know about it, then, you know, you're looking for those obvious differences as the show progresses and the movie progresses. So either way, I'm just looking forward to seeing a different point of view on that story. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan of Peter Pan, but I am definitely not a fan of Peter Pan. There have been three books recently that have been authorized by the Jamberry Estate to continue on the Peter Pan storyline, and I've read all three of those, and I thoroughly enjoyed them. So, you know, I'll get behind it. I thought it'd be cool, you know, to mention something about it.
Right. Well, for me, I would have to say that out of all the stuff that's out for Peter Pan, I think I enjoy the stories, like the original books, more than anything else. Like the Disney film really kind of glosses over a lot of stuff.
As Disney films often do.
Yeah. And then the one that they made, the other movie that they made with Fairuza Balk, you know. Or wait, what that was
Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz, never mind. I'm getting my classics mixed up. But you know, some of the other films and stuff that have come out for Peter Pan have I don't know, they seem to kind of miss a lot of the points of the book. Like they focus a lot on like the crazy stuff that he does, and you know, like they focus too much on the details and not the point. So I think that I don't really know if that story could be translated in this manner, but I'm hoping that somebody, you know, I'll wait until I can see what somebody else's vision of it looks like and make my judgments then, I guess.
Those books, by the way, they're called Peter and the Star Catchers, Peter and the Shadow Thieves, Peter and the Secret of Rondoon, and Peter and the Sword of Mercy. Those were officially licensed prequels to the Peter Pan story. And the sequel being, there was Little White Bird, Peter Pan in Kingston Gardens, Peter and Wendy, and Peter Pan in Scarlet. Those are the sequels that are out. So, and Finding Neverland was a really good movie. Did you ever get a chance to watch that one?
I think so. That it sounds familiar to me, and I'm drawing a blank on exactly what it's about.
That one was about Jamberry himself. Johnny Depp.
I don't know.
It was a pretty good story. It focused on Jamberry himself, and then what it took for him to create this world that Peter Pan exists in. You know, as a writer.
Yeah, gonna have to say that I probably didn't see it because I'm not recalling any details of the film at all.
That's because you suck. So anyway, yeah, those are the stories we have for this segment. I know, rather short and annoying, right? But that's how we are, short and annoying. So we'll go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to review some of the things that we've done this past week or two. Be right back.
Hi, this is Brandy Ossett, Reiki Master Teacher and High Priestess, and also author of The Goddess Guide. Please visit my website at brandyossett.com for information on all things spiritual and mythological.
And welcome back to the panel cast.
Yay.
So, everybody, how are you enjoying the new panel cast website? Is it a lot easier for you guys?
It's definitely a lot easier for me to use.
And how do you like it, Brian? What about it do you like the most?
I like the layout for it. It's nice and simple. It's easy to find everything. And, you know, all of the shows are, you know, we've the archive especially, I think, is the nicest touch to it because, you know, people can go back and listen to all of the old shitty episodes. I really would recommend you people start listening around episode 20 on. Like, there are some of our first episodes are just, yeah.
Well, some of those first episodes, I mean, we were recording them, like, in my bedroom.
Yeah, like, we were, It was just like random places, you know. We were feeling out. I mean, we had never tried a podcast before. We didn't really know what we were doing. I think that's pretty much true of everybody's first podcast. You know,
and
you can
it was boring. And what was worse was that we had music.
I mean,
in the
we
background.
Had no show structure.
So
we would
people
just
couldn't hear a lot of what
we
were saying.
You think
I went
we ramble
through,
a lot now. You
I had
listen to some of those old episodes.
I built the
we would
website,
just ramble
so
on
I had
about
to,
nothing.
You know, repost all 71 episodes of the show that we had done, and every now and then I would tune into a couple of them and see, you know, how they were, and oh my god, we were horrible. That's not saying that we're any better now. I mean, I'm pretty sure that we're boring as shit now. Yeah. Well, we take breaks. We, you know, take breaks. And then we take some breaks. So it's kind of cool now. But,
no.
Yeah, I hope
we
you guys
just have
really
a little bit more
new
structure now.
Site.
So.
I hope it's a lot easier for you guys to maneuver around and look around and stuff. Eventually, we're going to be phasing out the forum site, or at least add that as a back, an actual forum site, and use the Panelcast subsite as the main site. So, hope you guys enjoy it and like it. Now, moving forward, we're going to be doing some reviews on TV shows and stuff that we've been watching this season. Brian, why don't you go first?
Finally got caught up with Dexter. It was a little behind this season, but finally went through, caught up to where they're at now. And
right,
I wasn't at the end of last season. Like, I was really kind of curious as to what direction they were going to take the show in. You know, with everything that happened with the, you know, the death of his wife, and so like the way that the season is progressing now wasn't really what I expected, but it's still,
I don't know. Did you watch
still
the
good.
Latest
it's
episode?
It's still enjoyable. I was kind of expecting them to focus more on Rita's death, and that almost seems to be
the
kind
latest
of just
episode
like a
had
side note.
Aster coming back. Okay.
I believe well, so. What day does
that
it,
one touches a little bit
air,
on
so
what
I might not
last
have
season.
Caught
and,
the most recent.
You know, I'll be honest with you. Last season, I was kind of bored. I kind of thought that, you know, this was going to be the end of Dexter.
It
wasn't doing all
one.
Too well. John Lithgow, while being, you know, a great actor and a good villain, just didn't add enough spice for me to the storyline. So I wasn't enjoying it as much. And then at the beginning of this season, I kind of didn't enjoy it as much either. I thought it was very, well, overdramatic and a little too drawn out. But here we are. We got 3 episodes left in the season, and I'm really digging it. I think Julia Stiles is a great addition to the show.
Yeah. She definitely is kind of putting an interesting touch into like everything that's going on. It just, like I said, that it wasn't really what I was expecting. I mean, I had heard, you know, stories that she was going to be on the show, so I didn't really know in what capacity. I think
that's why that the show is progressing like, in the way that it is this season is because,
you know, just between like
you know
like
the,
Dexter
there's obvious
dealing with,
tension
with
between
Rita's
him and Julia
death,
Stiles
but,
and the possibility of a romantic relationship evolving
that.
From it. And I think that's because he's trying to replace Rita or, you know, feel normal in that aspect. And this last episode shows that. Like, he, I don't know. It's a real eye-opening moment during the part of the show, this last episode. And if you missed it, you should really check it out because it answers a lot of questions.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons that, yeah, I'll probably go back and watch it. I don't remember, like, what days it airs. So I kind of watch, like, on an irregular schedule. But, I think the reason why I'm probably getting into this season a little bit more than because I kind of felt like you did last season where like the whole Trinity Killer thing was good, but there was a lot of that like tension that they have in the other seasons where it just like, you know, kind of keeps you on the edge of your seat the whole time with like, you know, Dexter doing his stuff, his work, you know, plus trying to just deal with his regular life and interacting with everybody else. A lot of that I think was kind of missing in that, like,
right.
Yeah, it was some fucked up things that were happening, but you really kind of knew that, I mean, his interactions with Trinity weren't really going to get him caught, you know, because like Trinity wasn't going to do anything about it. And while he did fuck with his life, like, you know, I mean, Trinity, you know, himself was being careful about what he was doing. So it was a kind of a cat and mouse thing between them, but it wasn't really that thing where, like, they have this season where he's, you know, he's being pursued.
Right, I want to see what happens between,
you know, like,
him
he's
and
got
RoboCop.
Somebody else at the department that's suspicious of him, and, like, you know, there's the, you can almost feel that possibility of other people finding out what he does, and so. Yeah, it took me a while to place who that was. I'm like, God.
Apparently those cybernetic enhancements.
So familiar. Who is that? And then
down
I happen to pay attention to the credits after one episode, and it's Peter Weller. I'm like, oh, shit.
I do have to admit, though, one thing that pisses me off about Dexter, especially in the past two seasons, maybe even three, is that his serial killerness, the actual killing of people, have taken, like, a backseat. It's like, and it's not so much that he's not doing it as often, which he's not, but it's like, you know, he would spend a season stalking people, stalking a prey. He would focus on a certain person, and at the end of the season, when he finally gets to kill them, there was that gratification, that, you know, that whole tension build up at the end of the season. You're like, oh, sweet, finally that motherfucker's dead.
Right.
You know? And in the past couple of seasons, that's just taken a backseat. I mean, how many people has he killed in the past two? And it's sad that I'm mad that he hasn't killed enough people. Right? But how many people has he killed in this past two seasons? Not a lot. I mean, it's all taken a back seat. And I'd like to see them get back to the nitty-gritty. I'd like to see Dexter in his old ways, you know, doing the ritual, doing his killing, wrapping everybody up in plastic, and the whole nine. It's happened, nine episodes into the season? It's happened once? You know, so I'm feeling kind of ripped off in that aspect. Yeah, I know he killed the one guy at the beginning of the season with the little anchor
for the
thing,
the new season
that he met in the
bathroom.
Well,
he's killed two people so far,
and then he
that I can remember off the top of my head.
The roadkill guy. Who else?
Okay,
yes,
so that's
the bodyguard.
That would be
okay,
three,
that's
then.
Three people.
Yeah, and then the bodyguard.
Right, the guy that he ended up putting in a gay position,
and the.
But, I mean, those were not dramatic deaths. Yeah. Those were just...
Yeah, well, he kind of got interrupted on the second one.
It just felt like... And maybe it's because with Dexter, they've gotten us to just see that it's part of his routine, that it's part of his life, so it's not as special as it used to be. But that's what I liked about the show, was that it was American Psycho, but he's a cop, you know, or that he was in the police system or what have you. You know, and that's what I really enjoyed about it. And it doesn't feel like that anymore. He's becoming too human. And I don't know. I mean, good for Dexter, good for the character, but that's not what I love about him. I love his cold-hearted, calculating, murderous ways and him trying to hide it. You know, I liked his routine. I liked what he had to do, his ritual. You know, his dark passenger, the whole nine, but and it seems that they're not focusing on it. This time he's like, he's Superman, or, you know, Batman, but that likes to kill, you know?
Right.
He's just playing more superhero, more taking care of everybody else, and just happens to murder people at the same time. So I don't know. And that's what's sad, because I don't know if I like this season because the way it shifted into this drama TV series that I suddenly like because of the drama, or what, you know, or because it's Dexter. Because it's definitely shifted gears. It is not the same show that it was the first two seasons. It's definitely a different show. So I don't know if I like the evolution or if I like it's because I like those kind of shows that I like Dexter this season. You know, there's that toss up in there of why I like it or what's the reason for it, you know? So. But you like it.
Yeah.
One show that I am
not enjoying
anymore.
Like I said, it's
Trek,
kind of taking a much different direction than
I
thought it was going
to be.
I'm enjoying it so far.
And this season just blows. Like, I don't know any other way to describe it. That's the next show I want to do in my review
with
Chuck on this season. It seems like ever since the death of his father in last season, Scott Bakula, everything just seems so repetitive. Like, how many times is Chuck going to get the intersect taken out of him, only to get it back? You know, it's just gotten really, really old. And I had hoped that with the Bymore being rebuilt as a CIA headquarters, as the new castle, that it'd be a lot more cooler, and we'd see a lot more interaction on that stuff, but it feels like, I mean, how often do we see the two random characters? I can't remember their names. Jeffrey and what's his name? Yeah, I mean, they show up for like maybe 5 minutes an episode, you know. The show just seems to be focused around Chuck,
Casey, I can't remember his name, but yeah, I know who you're talking about.
His girlfriend, and Morgan Grimes, which is okay. I mean, that's what the series was really based on, but they have all these people in the show that they've spent the past few seasons building up relationships with, only to make them sit in the back seat. You know, it just, and maybe it's because of budget cuts or what have you, but I don't know. I'm kind of missing out on it. I do have to throw up, you know, a lot of props for the random geeky bits that they do. All the different Gretas this season have been awesome. This recent Greta being, of course, my future ex-wife, Summer Glau. I liked her interaction in there. Stone Cold Steve Austin showed up. We had Dolph Lundgren show up. You know, Armand Desante. A lot of great cameos showing up all over the place, but I still feel the story is lacking. Linda Hamilton as his mom is more confusing and annoying than it is revealing and heartfelt, you know?
Yeah, I'm not following that storyline at all. Like,
it's
This season is annoying.
And I haven't watched last night's episode yet, so.
And I don't know if that's
it'll be revealing, but.
See if I'm just supposed to be fucking lost.
Chuck, you're annoying me. I'm glad they moved you on another night, so I don't even have to bother the competition of you and Big Bang Theory, but at this point it wouldn't matter because Big Bang Theory always wins. Because that is a show that just can't stop being funny.
Chuck is, sadly, what it's doing now is it's kind of turning into the show that I assumed it was in the first place.
Silly.
Like, the reason why I didn't start watching Chuck when it first came out is because I thought it was going to be a show like it is now, where it's just...
Right.
You know, it's...
Yeah, it's getting annoying as hell.
Yeah, it's getting too much...
And enough,
like,
with the tension between him and his girlfriend,
like,
already.
Even
Jesus
the
Christ,
serious
they're already banging.
Not even serious.
Get over it. Like, there's no need for additional tension. They should be focusing on the cohesive unit of Castle. You know, and they should be going on more awesome missions and doing all this other random shit, as opposed to still bickering with each other and yeah, lame. It's
it just Morgan's sounds like still it's annoying, like they're just recycling the dialogue from all the previous seasons through this one.
Chuck, this season you're failing me, and I will not be surprised if you don't get picked up next season.
Okay, yeah.
Hopefully you get your shit together and come back next season kicking ass, but I'm not holding my breath at this point. We all know you're going to get the Intersect back. We all know that everything's going to work out for you. Yay, yay, yay. And for the most part, I'm guessing your mom's going to die at the end of the season as well. So, yeah. We'll see what happens. Brian, you had one other show you wanted to talk about?
This is a show. It's in second season right now. So I'm kind of late to the game on this, like I am with a lot of things. But it's a TV show. It's on Showtime, called United States of Terra. And at first, like, when I first heard about it, it just sounded kind of like an awful idea. Like, I was thinking it was going to be just sort of like a new Tracy Ullman kind of thing. It was like, no thanks. But essentially, what the show is about is it stars Toni Collette playing a woman who has DID. Which, if anybody out there is not familiar with, you know, the parlance of psychology, that's dissociative identity disorder, formerly known as multiple personality disorder. So basically, it's just like a story. I mean, it's about a woman and her family dealing with her DID. But they actually, like, they do it pretty well. And Toni Collette is actually pretty good at you know, playing all of the different characters that she turns into. Like, they're... The characters are kind of stereotypes in some ways of, you know, like kind of like a exaggerated like teenager and sort of like a school marmish, like 1950s housewife kind of thing. But they do a good job of explaining the reasonings behind that as they like explore like the reasons why she has these different personalities, and you know, they really do, they like they kind of touch on a lot of things, and from what I understand, like their portrayal of the disorder is fairly accurate, and they talk a lot about, you know, exploring whether this is, you know, like the ID is actually a disorder where the people are exhibiting distinct separate personalities, or if these are just sort of like a disorder where it's still them, but you know, they kind of like switch back and forth between different moods, kind of like with a bipolar disorder. So they touch on a lot of different things. Like they deal with the controversy surrounding the disorder, as well as dealing with, you know, a lot of the other things without really sort of like they, it seems like they focus really hard on trying to make as accurate a portrayal as they can of the show. And not like there's a lot of,
I tried watching
stuff.
It.
Like,
I watched the first episode.
Show,
and I just couldn't get behind
they're not
it for some reason.
Out to make a comedy.
I don't know. Most TV shows out there, one way or another, we can associate in some capacity.
Yeah,
or
I
another,
enjoy it.
You know, or relate to, or what have you. This one, I wasn't feeling it. And so, you know, and I appreciate a good job.
Like
one of my favorite shows out right now is
show
The Big C.
For everybody.
I mean, that's a fucked up TV show.
There's not a lot
good.
Of action. It's really,
you know,
more of a,
and so I don't know. I hear all this praise
because,
and
you know,
accolades.
Essentially, it's just like a family drama.
For United States of Terror, and I haven't had a chance to watch it, but maybe I'll give it another shot. I mean, if you're digging it, then, you know, I'll probably like it as well. So, we shall see. And that's on Showtime? Awesome. All right, well, if you have nothing else, we'll go ahead and take a quick break and come back with some comic reviews.
Greetings, Forbidden Panelites. This is Benjamin Gleibert, Director of Publishing for Symantec, San Diego's premium comic book publisher and home of Mythoi and the webcomic The Undergrounds. Check us out online at Symantec.com. That's Symantec.com. For now, enjoy your geeky gurus, AJ and Brian. Symantec Publishing. Find the meaning in print.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Panelcast. All right, we're going to start talking about some of the comics that we've been reading. And I guess I'll go ahead and start off with... let's see. I read the latest issue of Scarlet, which is Scarlet number 3. And again, this series is just I really like this series a lot. I think that Brian Michael Bendis is doing a pretty phenomenal job with the writing for this. You've read the first two issues, right?
I believe I've even read the third one. Is the third one the one that starts in Portland?
Yes.
Yeah, then I've read all three of them.
And, this is a really great series, and, it's kind of hard to describe exactly my feelings about it. I mean, I've talked about it before. This particular issue deals with, really starts kind of getting into, you know, what it is that Scarlet is doing and like what exactly her plans are. And it's still kind of up in the air as to whether she's supposed to be viewed as sort of like a superhero or a supervillain. Like, I guess they haven't really dealt with any superpowers or anything in this. So I guess superhero or supervillain is probably the wrong kind of dynamic to bring to it. But I guess maybe protagonist or antagonist.
I don't know. It feels more along the lines of V, but without the costume. You know, and where she's just trying to extract revenge and show the corruption of the police.
Right. Yeah, she definitely does have that. I mean, she's a vigilante, obviously.
Right.
You know, but she definitely has sort of more of like a V for Vendetta kind of feel to her, in that the like her motivations for doing what she's doing are definitely kind of parallel to that. But I guess a lot of vigilantes probably all have the same kind of rationale in doing what they're doing. But it seems like in this case, at least, like this storyline for this, like it's starting to ramp up and not just be a girl who's going out committing random acts of violence against things. Like, it sounds like she's really got a plan, and it's something big. And I'm really interested to see how this plays out. You know, with the way that issue number 3 ended, like, you can really sort of get the feeling like there's a whole lot more going on than what she's revealed so far. Like, you know, the first couple issues deal with Scarlet sort of relating her backstory, and you get a little bit of an idea of what she's doing as she's going along, and like you see some of the vigilantism that she's been doing, but it really deals a lot more with kind of giving you the background and giving you her motivation for the character. And then this third issue really sort of jumps into what it is that she's planning out, and you realize that this isn't just a sort of revenge thing where she's getting back at the people that have hurt her. I mean, she's doing that, but she's got something a lot bigger planned as well.
Right.
So, yeah, anybody out there that has not started reading Scarlet needs to go out and start reading this comic.
It's definitely something different than what's out there now. I mean, Bendis is writing Powers, which is one of my favorite comic book series of all times, and it seems to take kind of a little break from that not quite reality things that are.
Yeah, it's like an almost real comic.
Like ultra reality type of comic, you know, where. And the fact that she breaks the fourth wall a lot is something that I dig, you know?
Yeah. It really kind of invests you with the character because you feel like, as you're reading it, like, you know, that you're really kind of understanding, like, it's not just like a story that you're reading, like, it's being told to you.
Right. Right, and in that aspect, it kind of brings you in closer to the story and to the character itself, you know, where she's not only doing all this stuff, but she's explaining why and what's happening. You know, it's almost like Burn Notice, you know, where, like, you know, all this stuff is happening, but at the same time, you've got him describing, you know, spies in the field normally use this, and this, and this is why, and blah, blah. And it's the same thing with Scarlet, you know. She's explaining to you why she's doing it and what's happening and, you know, what the causes are behind the scenes and all that stuff. And it's really good. I really, really like it.
Right.
Really.
And it really, I like how it deals with the issues of things like police brutality and stuff, because, you know, whatever side of the fence that you come down on, I think that there's something that you can find in this comic book to entertain you, because it deals with those issues a lot, and it doesn't really seem to come off as sort of a preachy thing. Like, Scarlet herself is kind of preachy in describing what she feels, but, you know, I mean, that's the character's ideas, and that's really what it feels like, is you're hearing the opinions and the ideas of the character and not the writer preaching at you about something. So,
right.
Like, I would say from these comics, I don't know how Brian Michael Bendis personally feels about the issues of vigilantism and police brutality and things like that, but I definitely know how the character feels about it. And I know that she's, you know, she's really sort of very motivated to correct what she sees as a problem in society. And that's, I think, really what ultimately makes an interesting story, is when you're able to get a perspective on something that you've never seen before. Kind of one of the reasons why I think that Dexter is so successful is because, you know, obviously most people don't agree that killing people is a good thing, but the stories are told in such a way that you understand the motivations of the characters. And I think that's really the biggest thing, is when you're reading a story, is being able to understand and believe the motivations of the characters.
Right, and
will help you believe pretty much anything else.
Relatability.
Right. I mean, I may not agree entirely with the Scarlet character, but I definitely feel for her, and I really am driven to want to keep reading this story to find out what happens.
Are you wanting to join her cause yet?
No, I'm not really much of a vigilante, so I would make a terrible superhero because
Because you're lazy and cathartic?
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, I don't I don't have the motivation to want to go out and do any sort of vigilante acts. You know, it's just not me. But then again, I've never had something like really awful like that happen to me. I'm, you know, so who knows?
Right. No, totally. Yeah, I'm really digging the Scarlet series so far, and I'm anxious to see what happens, what the big plan is, you know. But at the same time, I've read the wiki on it, and I kind of already know, so in that aspect, I feel like I suck. But I'm anxious to see how the storyline
progresses. I try to avoid doing that sometimes with series, like going and reading the wikis and having, you know, like all the breakdowns and everything that people do, because I kind of want to discover that stuff for myself. Like, I like sort of doing it after the fact.
Right. Totally agree with you.
You know, like a series that's ended, I'll go back and like find the wikis and find all the things and like read other stuff. But while it's ongoing, I don't want to know.
Well, you know, for the most part, I just go onto wiki just to, again, once the series is already done or what have you, I love going onto wiki and just getting a brief recap on it. But, you know, in doing this show, I go onto wiki just to remind myself of who the writers and the creators and all that stuff are. And, you know, occasionally I'll come across something I shouldn't have read.
Yeah.
And in that aspect, that's where I spoiled Scarlet for myself. But having said that, don't go to wiki and spoil it. Read Scarlet yourselves and you know, develop your own opinions on it, because we think it's a great series. And again, with Powers being one of my favorite series ever, Bendis is not letting me down with this one. So, yeah.
Well, so what about you, Mo? What have you been reading?
Honestly, I haven't read too much. I've been busy with doing a super secret project, which we're not allowed to discuss here on the show until the next episode. So I haven't had a chance to read too much. But I have read one comic that I don't know what it is about Mark Millar, but I mean, his writing isn't all that fantastic. The art that he normally uses isn't, you know, so phenomenal or you know, it's not groundbreaking or anything like that. But I think I like the violence, that the style he writes as, you know, a violent nature. So because of that, I picked up his newest series called Superior. It is written by, again, Mark Millar and illustrated by Lanil Francis Yu. And before I go any further, all you artists out there, please get pronounceable names. Because, you know, we're butchering your names otherwise, and yeah.
I think the biggest problem is just, you know, the, I lost my train of thought with that. Continue.
We broke Brian. Again. It happens at least once an episode where we break him. So, yeah. Anyway, so Superior is a comic basically about a kid who suffers from multiple sclerosis. It's only one issue out so far, but basically what happens is somehow he is imbued with these powers based off of a superhero character in a movie that he saw. And it goes from there. So again, only one issue has been put out. I've really dug the issue. I'm looking forward to the next issue. It explains, you know, how the kid has deteriorated from an amazing athlete to a child with multiple sclerosis, how the disease has really affected him and his lifestyle and everything, and how now he gets picked on and stuff. And, you know, he's granted one wish, and this is his wish. So I'm presuming that from here on out, this series is going to focus on him being the superior character and what he does with it. Almost in a Shazam-like fashion that Superior has come about. But it's done so far in a way that I'm contemplating doing a superhero story as well for Forbidden Panel. Because I want to write something on the same type of vein, you know. But it's a good series so far. Like I said, it's only been one issue. Mark Millar has yet to disappoint me. The Authority being one of my favorite comic series that he did. Wanted was a great comic book. Kick-Ass and Nemesis is coming out pretty good. Some of the Old Man stuff he did. Old Man Logan was an awesome storyline, in my opinion. So, you know, I'm going to give Superior a chance and see whether or not I like it. And go from there.
Seems like you do so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like I said, the one issue. But it's got me in that one issue. So, yeah. Brian?
Yes, I actually, the something else that I read here, and I threw up a review for it on the website if anybody has seen it. I just read the debut issue for a new series called The Traveler, which is being done by Stan Lee and Chad Wade,
I think
is how that's pronounced. Mark Wade. Sorry. I'm really terrible with names.
Bob. All right, from now on, Bob from Batman. Bob from
If everybody was just named like Bob or John or something like Mark isn't really that much. Isn't that hard of a name? I'm terrible with people's names in general. Like it takes me a while to learn names.
It took you a while to remember my name, and that's only two letters.
Yeah. You know, it's just one of those things. Like, I have a lot of trouble associating names with particular people. Like, I could know what they look like, and I could know the work that they've done, but this remembering their name is just a terrible thing.
Well, that's what you get for being named Brian with a Y.
Yeah.
That's your own fault.
It is. Okay, well, anyway. So I read the first issue of this, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed reading this. I did have a few issues with the comic, but they were really more of just kind of like issues with some of the plot elements, like not really anything terrible. The dialogue was a little comic booky, and I'm assuming that it's probably just to get everybody up to speed in the first issue as to what's going on. But what I mean by that is, you know, when you, especially this was something that a lot of like the old comic books from like the Golden and Silver Age really sort of had, where the characters were talking about exactly what it was that they were doing. So not only did you see them like flipping through the air, but they were also describing how and why they were flipping through the air in their dialogue. And it was kind of awkward.
Well, that's Stan Lee for you, though.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, that's kind of something that he does, and it just feels it just kind of seems a little unnatural to me. But it wasn't bad enough to the point where I just couldn't read the comic. It's just something that it stands out to me when I read it. Like it's just one of those kinds of things that I notice, and it draws me out of the comic a little bit, but. Like, the storyline itself, like, the pacing of the story was fine, and I liked, you know, the characters and everything like that. Like, it seems like it's going to be a pretty interesting story, and, especially with the way that it ended, like, you know, it looks like they're definitely going for a more adult storyline, so I can tell that they're not going to pull any punches with it.
Yeah, from my understanding, Stan Lee developed the character in the storyline. Mark Waid wrote it. So Mark Waid's style of writing, as I discussed on our last episode with the incorruptible and irredeemable, very over-the-top violence and very harsh tones that they take on them. So I'm interested in seeing how that works with a Stan Lee created character. You know,
right.
You stated that, you know, with Stan Lee, with this comic book, it's I'm flipping through the air as they're flipping through the air, and that's right, that's very reminiscent of a Stan Lee style back in the day. So just to see that appearing again in this comic is nothing that wasn't expected, but I am curious about how Mark Waid's interaction with it, you know, influence on it or what have you will
but yeah, it definitely has that very sort of like Stan Lee comic booky sort of feel to it, and I'm curious to see how it works. Like, I'm interested enough in this series to want to keep following it, and not just because I'm just going to give it the benefit of the doubt kind of thing. Like, I'm actually interested in this story, you know, at least with the storyline they're setting up. It's just the only other thing that I really had a gripe with was entirely just like a nerd gripe and not really having anything to do with anything, and that was just their description of the superpowers that they had, where the characters, both the villain and the villains and the superhero, are supposed to have powers that are based off of the four fundamental forces of the universe, like the atomic forces that, you know, control all of the interactions between atoms and their particles. But they got that completely wrong. And I don't know if that was just an oversight or if they have like some sort of an explanation for it. But yeah, I had like an entire like, you know, like, well, if, you know, if this horse in this scene one was gray and then it was, you know, white in the next scene, then how, kind of moment where I'm just like, wait a minute, that's not a fundamental force. But I don't know, maybe they'll explain it or maybe they'll just keep running with what they've got and I'll just have to deal with it. So yeah, I really am interested to see, you know, a Stanley style done in a more adult fashion. And it seems like they've been able to pull that off so far. And I mean, even if the power's not scientifically accurate, they're still interesting. So I'll keep reading it.
Awesome. Now, this next review that I want to talk about isn't really based on the comic book that I've read yet. I'm very, I don't want to say anxious, but interested in where it's going. But at the same time, I'm afraid of stupidness. And that being Batman Incorporated. It is written by Grant Morrison, and it's featuring, of course, the Batman. Basically, what's happened in the past, if you guys have been following Batman at all recently, about 2 years ago, Batman was killed during Final Crisis. Then it turned out that he wasn't killed. He was sent into different sections of time and and kept flash-forwarding through time until he got into the present day. So now, during that time, Dick Grayson has taken the mantle of Batman, and Damian Wayne has taken the role of Robin. Well, apparently, now Batman's back. And so instead of Dick Grayson handing over the cowl and going back to being Nightwing, Batman has said, no, there's no reason why there can't be two Batman. In fact, there's no reason why there can't be a bunch of Batmans. So I'm going to create Batman Incorporated, which is... he essentially franchises it and drafts and trains and commands a team of heroes who will answer to him throughout the world. So, yeah, a little interested in what's going on with that. But at the same time...
So it sounds like they're just kind of reiterating the whole Superman Dies saga, where Superman dies and then now they've got a whole bunch of other people that are... under the Superman mantle.
Yeah, but at the same time, those were somewhat Supermen. This is, you know... If I were Dick Grayson, I'd be pissed. Because Dick Grayson busted his ass his entire life to become the next Batman, take his place, and do his best to be who Bruce Wayne has trained him to be. And now Batman's showing up and saying, hey, you know what? You're a Batman. You're a Batman. Wouldn't you like to be a Batman, too? And like, basically, you know, in my opinion, it just downplays everything that Dick Grayson has busted his entire life to do, busted his ass his entire life to do, and become.
Right.
You know, instead of paying homage to the Batman and showing him respect, now Batman's saying, oh, okay, that's cool. Let's have a few more. And, yeah, I'll pick you, and you, and you, and you. And it's kind of retarded. Now, this is Grant Morrison. So, which means that you cannot take anything that he writes at face value. There's always at least 20 different layers to what his story is pertaining before you can actually get to the truth. Because this man does his research. He's going to pull out supervillains that you haven't seen since 1922. You know, before Batman was even created, there was this villain out there in the world. Well, he's suddenly going to show back up in the fucking Batman universe. That's how Grant Morrison is. So I can't take it at face value. I'm going to have to wait a few issues before I can actually give an honest opinion or formulate a decent opinion based on it. So we shall see what happens. Now, again, this is Batman. There's only... I can't even name how many DC comics I read. I just don't read that many DC comics. I'm not a big fan. I like their cross title promotions stories that they do, like Final Crisis and Infinite Crisis and Crisis This and Crisis That. But as far as individual series go, I don't really read them except for Batman. Batman has always been like one of my favorites, so I read them. Unfortunately, as I've complained many times on this show before, aren't there enough fucking Batman titles out there? Like, how many goddamn Batman titles do I need to read? Batman Confidential, Batman Black and White, Batman, Batman and Robin, The Dark Knight, The Detective, Jesus Christ. And now with this new series, they're creating 5 more titles with Batman Incorporated. So...
Right, so watch each one of those characters will spin off into their own comic series.
And it's just annoying. Like, seriously, it's annoying. This stuff is the reason why trade paperbacks sell so well. Because people can't afford to buy all these individual side issues and all this other side stuff that's going on, that they would rather wait till it comes out in a trade for $15 and buy everything that they missed out on for the past couple of months and catch up at that point. You know, this is why...
It's definitely why I like trades, you know, because then I can just get a self-contained story and just sit down and read it and not... have to worry about, you know, keeping up with all of the new whatevers that are out.
Exactly. It just makes it so simple. It's reasons. This is one of those reasons. So, there's a quote going on that I want to read to you. Batman Group Editor Mike Martz has gone on record about Bruce Wayne sharing the cowl with Dick Grayson when asked about what it means to Bruce and Dick as individuals wearing the same mantle. Mart says, there's something the two of them are going to have to figure out themselves, but it would definitely require re-examining of the individual roles as heroes. And also what the whole concept and idea of Batman means to not only Gotham City, but the world as well. Mart also elaborates on the overall theme of the new title, saying, Grant Morrison, if he's writing Batman, or he's writing Batman and Robin, or he's writing Batman Incorporated, his storylines deal with the big concepts and the epic storyline and multi-layered bigger story. That's Grant's strong point. So that's what Batman Inc. is about. It's about expanding the Batman universe and the Batman line and the Batman cast of characters. He used Batman like 12 times in that fucking sentence. And that's how many goddamn new titles are going to be out there. He says to himself, multi-layered bigger story, and at least 4 or 5 different titles coming out with it. I'm sure it's going to be awesome. Grant Morrison is a phenomenal comic book writer. For those of you not familiar with his work outside of Batman, he's done... what has he done? I can't even pull it up. There's so many damn titles that he's done. Joe the Barbarian, The Invisibles, Hellblazer, Flex Mentallo, Sea Guy, We Three. We Three was awesome, by the way. The Filth. Fantastic Four, 1234, Marvel Boy, New X-Men, Batman, The Authority, so he's done a lot of comic books out there, and he is a great writer and a great storyteller, just so fucking complicated. And again, with all these different titles coming out now, it's going to be even harder to follow along with it, so...
Right.
I'll come back in a week or two, and once I've caught up with everything, and give you my opinion on it. So stay tuned until then. Brian, anything else you got?
No. Why don't we go ahead and take a quick break?
But you read DMZ.
Yeah, I've been catching up with it, but I'm still not caught up with the series. So.
But do you like it?
No, I hate it now.
Okay. Fine, we'll go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Guys, this is Daniel Corey. I'm the founder of Danger Cat Creative Studio, and I want to tell you real quick about my upcoming comic, Moriarty, The Dark Chamber. It's about Professor Moriarty, the arch nemesis of Sherlock Holmes. Working with artist Anthony Diachidua on it, letterer Dave Lampier. Please go to DangerCat.com and check it out. That's DangerCat.com. And please go over to Kickstarter.com. We're running a campaign right now to try to raise funds for the production of the book. So, shoot us an email, let us know how you like it, and we'll see you on the web.
Hey everybody, welcome back to PanelCast. Woo, are you guys excited? I know, I'm tired. How you doing, Brian?
Oh, was I supposed to say something there?
You're fired. Anyway, in this segment we're going to talk about a couple random things. First up, Brian has read a book, or is reading a book.
Yeah, I do that on occasion. No, actually, I started unpacking a lot of my unread books, and I realized that I really need to start digging into those. Because I have a whole shitload of just like a backlog of books that I haven't read. So, of course, I decided to start reading a book that I've already read before. And the book that I've been reading lately, if I don't know if anybody is familiar with it, it's a book called Kindred by Octavia E. Butler. And it's a really phenomenal book. I would recommend anybody go out there and read it. Essentially, what the book is about is a woman. I think she's like in her mid-20s or something like that. It's like a mid-20s black woman from the 1970s who finds herself, for whatever reason, like keeps time traveling back through time and distance to the antebellum South. And I want to say it takes place in like, I'm trying to remember the state. They don't really talk about it a whole lot, but it's like Georgia or something like that. Or it might be a little bit farther north than that, actually. But it deals with like her experiences of like, you know, how like her life from the 1970s compared to life in, you know, during the colonial period, you know, back during the days of slavery. And it's really a brutal book. Like, it's the stuff that happens in the book is really pretty awful. But Octavia Butler really did a lot of research into finding out exactly what life was like during that time period, and really put a lot, you know, I mean, you can definitely tell, like, she put a lot of effort into researching exactly what the life of slaves were like, and exactly, like, what kind of conditions they had, and it's...
Sounds a little messed up.
It's an extremely messed up book. Like, it's just, it's not a book that you're really going to feel like, it doesn't make you feel good when you read it, but it is a really good book. It's well written, you know, but it's a brutal story, but it really uses a kind of like a science fiction, a really mild science fiction background, because they don't ever really discuss like how or why she's time traveling like that. The time traveling is almost kind of a MacGuffin just to drive the story, really. But you know, it kind of presents it in a sort of like a fictional way, so I think it maybe makes it a little bit easier to read than it is. Like, it, while the story itself is like the things that happen, especially with the interactions, you know, of a woman who was raised up in essentially a free society, and, you know, I mean, she was, you know, while she did have to deal with racism and things like that, like, she really notices that compared to the conditions of growing up in the South, like, you know, she really had an easy time of it. And so there's an interesting contrast between, you know, relatively modern, because I mean, the book is older, obviously. It takes place in 1976, but, you know, it really sort of deals with, like, you know, contrasting that culture with our modern culture. And yeah, it's a rough book, but it's not as difficult as reading, you know, like any of like the things that Frederick Douglass has written about his life, where, you know, it's those almost kind of make your skin crawl even more, because, you know, they're firsthand accounts of what happened. And this it gives you a fictional setting, so it makes it a little bit easier to deal with, and you can kind of step back a little bit and look at the comparisons, and, you know, I guess have a little bit more of an objective look at, you know, what's happening in the book. But it's still really good, and, you know, viscerally it just kind of grabs you.
Well, all right then. I don't want to read that book.
I would recommend it. It's a fucked up book, but it's a really good book. It's written really well. And like I said, you know, Octavia Butler really did a lot of research and really understood, you know, I mean, what she was writing about. As far as I know, as far as I've been able to find out, Octavia Butler really is the only black woman that's wrote in the science fiction field. You know, there's a few other black writers in science fiction, but in terms of, like, black women writing science fiction, I think she's pretty much the only one. I could be wrong.
And I'm could pretty be sure you're wrong, there, but I'll say okay, and we can go with that.
Yeah.
Well,
but yeah, it's good. It's really it's a fantastic book.
And that's why Brian has no comic books to review this episode.
Yeah, it happens. I'll get a book and then, you know, I just start reading and reading and reading and ignoring everything else, including, you know, food and bodily functions. So
ew. And okay then. Well, this week was a big week in films. Well, not a big week, I'd say, but... Harry Potter came out. Let me just put it like that. Harry Potter came out, and I went with a couple of my friends down to go see the midnight showing. It was part one of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Now, what happened basically is that this is the last film in the franchise, and because it's such a long film that they've had to break it up into two different parts, much like Kill Bill. Unfortunately, you know, the first one comes out in November. The next one comes out in July sometime, which personally, in my opinion, is bullshit. But I would rather see them both released at the same time and then let us determine which one we want to see when we want to see it, you know, or at least 1 week apart from each other or something like that. To have them come out 6 months apart is torture, basically. And a good way for the film industry to make twice as much money, because everyone's going to want to go back. You know, they're going to re-release part one before part two comes out, so people will get a chance to refresh the memory before seeing the second part. And then we all have to wait another 6 months before both parts are on DVD. And then 3 months after that, Blu-ray will come out with, like, the 20 minutes of unseen footage director's cut. And then 6 months after that will be all the Harry Potter movies blended into one big, fat Blu-ray disc, you know? So... A little bit of crazy, but this film, this Harry Potter movie, was done by David Yates, and I have to say that it has to be one of my favorite Harry Potters so far. Great cinematography, great visualizations. The acting was as good as you can expect from this series. There was even like some really risque moments in there. You see Hermione and Harry Potter naked making out. Which is kind of hot.
In the movie.
You don't see everything, but you know that they're naked and that they're making out. So there's images like that. I don't know how to describe it properly. I'll just say that while it skips over certain parts of the book, and they have to because this movie's already 6 hours long, while it skips over certain parts of the book, the parts of the book that it does focus on are really good parts, and they do it in such a fashion to where you understand what's happening in relation to the book itself. Unfortunately, there are parts in the movie that they... In the previous movie, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, Brian, you and I went and saw that together.
Right.
The part where Dumbledore died at the end seemed very nonchalant. Like didn't even matter. You know, he falls down the bell tower and then that's all they hear about it. You know, and Dumbledore being such a main player in the films and the books and stuff, I would have thought they would have focused more time on it. But literally him dying took 45 seconds and that was all that they talked about it. So now, having said that, there are a couple of more Dumbledore moments in this new film without giving away anything. and that the deaths aren't paid too much attention to, and you don't seem to really care about. Except for the last death. That last death, if you don't cry, there's something wrong with you. Especially if you're a huge fan of the books and the movies. But yeah, this film was very gritty, and it was very realistic. Like, you can picture this happening. Like, you can totally imagine this going on. Again, the cinematography was amazing. The locations that they filmed at were gorgeous. Oh my god, I mean, there's at least three or four random, like... Brian, you remember in the last movie when they burned down the Weasley's house?
Right.
How that house was, like, in the middle of a field of nothing?
Mm-hmm.
So there's at least three or four of those types of houses in this film. And the surrounding areas are just gorgeous. I mean, these are just beautiful locations and locales, and I want to live there. As long as I can get, you know, Fios, I'm good to go.
Right.
You know? And, yeah, so... They did a great job, and it's by far one of my favorite movies of the series so far. If you haven't checked it out for whatever reasons, then, you know, please go check it out and let us know what you think about it. If you're going to kick yourself at the end of the movie, though. You're going to be like, god damn, why didn't I just wait? Now I have to wait 6 months for the next film to come out. It's too much. You will have that feeling. And on that aspect, I mean, he did a great job. I cannot wait for the second part. Because the first part, as many of you know with the book, is nothing but story and drama. Whereas the second part is the Battle of the Five Armies from The Hobbit. You know, this is going to be some epic battling shit going down here. And that is what I'm very excited to see and impatient and anxious to see. So, yeah. Brian, you got anything else?
No. I think that's pretty much it. I guess maybe once I crack open one of these other books, we'll have something else to talk about. But
all right. One big snafu that came out twice this month so far is San Diego Comic-Con's inability to sell tickets. Originally on the 1st of November, San Diego Comic-Con opened up their website to visitors so that they can purchase 3 to 4 or 5 day passes, whatever they were going to purchase. The website initially crashed 2 hours after the first opening. On the 1st. It reopened again on the 8th to allow more people to come in and purchase, and again crashed no more than 3 hours into it. This past week, on the 22nd, the website opened up again to try and sell more tickets, and once again crashed. Could not handle the amount of people that wanted to see this movie. And in that aspect, I mean... It's a catch-22 at this point. You know, me and Brian have both bitched about this on many occasions, about how sick and tired we are of, like, the massive amounts of crowds that show up at the San Diego Comic-Con. I mean, it's just overwhelming the amount of people that are there.
I think it's even more overwhelming is the amount of body odor.
That, too. I mean, it's just everything, everything. The rudeness, the bumping into everybody, the inability to breathe, to have to scratch your nuts and you don't even know if that's your hand scratching it. You know, it's seriously, like, if this isn't a fire, man, you know what? If they want to get rid of all the geeks in the world, just throw one grenade at Con and that's it. There will be no more geeks ever because that's where they all are. And it's just massive insanity. So this is why... You know, the San Diego Comic-Con website crashes all the time because 200,000 people are flooding it to get their tickets. And it's insane.
Right. It's basically just a preview of what actually happens at Comic-Con.
Right. If a website crashes, that's what the convention's going to do. It's going to crash with all these people. It's just crazy amounts of people. Now, if we had actually had a booth there this year, then that's something we would want to see. We'd want to see that many people coming by our booth and being interested in our comic book any day of the week and twice on Sunday. You know, this is what we as comic book distributors and publishers want. Unfortunately, we don't have a booth there this year, so we're going to be walking around as fans, and I'm already annoyed at it, and we're not even there yet. So we've got, 6-7 months before Comic-Con happens, and it's already madness and annoying. So good job, San Diego Comic-Con. I mean, I know you fought hard and we helped fight with you to keep the comic convention in San Diego. Unfortunately, it looks like you're failing in actually getting more people there or accompanying the mass amounts of people that are going to come to the convention. Hopefully you take a cue from this, and seeing just your website in itself crashing on such multiple occasions by the weight and the burden of handling so many geeks showing up at one time to purchase something, that you will expand the comic book convention into other parts of San Diego, like you did last year by putting it in different hotels and stuff, as well as the convention center. Hopefully you'll understand the amount of people that are coming and even further expand where it's going to go so that we're not all crammed in there into one convention center on the hottest summer day of the year at one time. So you finally got what you want. You got the contract to 2015. Make it enjoyable for all of us. And that's my pitch session there.
Yeah, and I hate Blue Water.
And Brian hates Blue Water. Nothing new. So on that, we should bid ourselves adieu from you. Brian, you have anything you want to say before we leave?
I just want to wish everybody out there listening to have a happy holidays, whichever ones you choose to celebrate or not. And yeah, thanks for listening.
In the words of John Narcomi from John Hard Studios, happy Big Mistake Day. him being a naturalized Native Indian American, they call it the Big Mistake Day. We hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Stay tuned next week because, as I stated earlier, we have a really, really, really big announcement coming. Yeah, I can't go into it any more than that. It's going to be awesome. Please visit our websites, ForbiddenPanel.com, ZombieKillSquad.net. Find us on Facebook and Twitter under Forbidden Panel News or Zombie Kill Squad. Just keep visiting the site. Let us know what you think. Send all emails and inquiries to Brian with a Y at ForbiddenPanel.com and AJ at ForbiddenPanel.com. Please visit the links located at the bottom of the webpage. Let us know what you think of the new Panelcast website. And quit touching yourself because you'll go blind. Have a happy Thanksgiving, guys. We'll see you next week.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.